What if we want to be awkward the whole time?
I don't think anyone could stop you.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are joined by Pat Wick, who's here to talk us through the books of Bridgerton, and we're also going to talk about the TV series Bridgerton, which we all loved, and shut up, it's geeky, we're going to talk about it anyway.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Oh, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Pip, pip.
And Molly Glover.
I'm the diamond of the season.
Yeah, you certainly are. And I'm sure you can tell by the way we introduced ourselves that we'll be talking about Bridgerton today.
Sorry, that's what I remember mostly from Bridgerton.
And we've brought along somebody whom I'd say is an expert on Bridgerton.
Oh, geez, which, no.
Well, compared to me. Is an expert on Bridgerton compared to us, my lovely wife, friend of the show, Pat Wick.
Yay!
Hey. Yay.
Pat, you've read all the books, right?
Yes, I have.
Which
makes you way more of an expert than any of us.
Fair.
Where I've not read any of the books, I don't believe Nick or Molly have either.
I didn't even know there were books.
Well, and there's... Yes?
I knew there were books when I started seeing people like Pat and Jennifer Klupp talking about how these books they love are a show now.
Yeah. So I do have to say that while, you know, it's kind of a Regency romance and considerable portions of it may be a bit predictable, we are still going to spoil the shit out of the show. So
of the show, and maybe not the books, though, because I am interested for more show. Okay.
There's going to be some talk about maybe some things in the books that are.
Oh, I have questions, but like I want to make sure we're not like being like, oh, well, actually, Hyacinth in book 7 dies. You know, like that's what I don't want.
We're not going to talk.
All right, cool.
Nothing
that,
like that.
That kind of spoiler cool. stuff. But for listeners, we are going to spoil the show. The show is on. It's Netflix is where it's streaming, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Original show on Netflix. I should just toss out there right away that it has been reported. It has been picked up for an additional 7 seasons, and this indeed makes sense because there are in fact 8 books in the series. So,
and Pat, she's already going like this. What are there more than 8? Less than 8?
There's a book of, they call them second epilogues, where, because every book has an epilogue with like 8 months later, 2 years later, something like that. She came up with something called the Bridgerton's Happily Ever After or whatever. And it's the epilogue. It's the second epilogues for all of them, including a story about Violet, the mother. And some of these are the couple years later. And some of them are about a side character doing something as well. So that's the other book in it. So it's kind of 9 books.
We kind of got an epilogue on the show where all of a sudden they fast forwarded at least 9 months or so, give or take.
Approximately.
Yes.
Yeah. Approximately. Yeah. Well, and I think Pat obviously could say this too, but each of the Bridgerton main books are about one of the Bridgerton children.
Yes.
So there are 8 children in the family, 4 boys and 4 girls. Isn't that right?
Correct.
And they each get their own book.
Yes.
I also noted that Pat said each epilogue tells you more about the couple. Is there a significant couple in each of the books?
No, like in the second one of For the Duke and I, it's about Simon and Daphne years later. So it's about something that happened in that book. So it's a second epilogue that works with the couple that is from that book. Sometimes it's, you know, like a side character getting married or doing something else, but sometimes it's just about what's happening with that couple months or years later.
But each book is about a specific Bridgerton child presumably falling in love and getting married or something along those lines?
Correct.
Ah, awesome.
They are romance books.
They are a series of Regency romance books.
Which I got to say, typically not my cup of tea. I don't read romance. I don't really watch romance. Obviously, romantic subplots are a major part of a lot of storytelling, but like it's never been something I sought out. But I really loved Bridgerton and I really enjoyed it.
I will even say we watched people talk about it. Was out for maybe 2 weeks before we watched it. At least. And so we saw a lot of people talk about how good it was, including, you know, you two and Wendy and other people. And we were both, I was just like, that's not my thing.
All right, let's give it a try.
And we finally were like, let's just watch one so we can tell everyone why we don't like it. And we watched four.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah. They've made a lot of different changes for what happens in the book because it's mostly about Simon and the Duke of Hastings and Daphne. They've made some changes that are like, okay, that was an odd choice as to like where something happened or who said something that didn't make sense. I loved how they added a lot of other characters in because if it's about the whole, you know, the Bridgerton family, the youngest, Hyacinth, would get almost no screen time because she's pretty much not in the first several books because she's so young. The basis is with the first one, Daphne's been on the market. It's actually, I believe, her second season. But, and she, yes. What now?
Just that we were both like, oh, her second season. Oh, what is she, an old maid?
It's been a while since I've read that particular book, but if I remember right, the reason why she's been on the market is that, without getting in, is that most everybody likes her, but it's this younger sister of these three guys that they're friends with all of them. So there's a lot of that going on. But I think it's still very fun. There are characters that aren't like either barely mentioned in the books or don't exist in the books. Like, yes, they go to the Modeste to get fitted, but she's not a character in any of the books. But it works really well to have more of the stories happen.
Well, didn't you say that the neighbor girl who's pregnant is not a character from the books at all?
Thompson?
Marina.
It's a character that they talk about in book four. But it does never have any book time at all. Yeah.
That was my question was, when we watched the first season of The Expanse, for example, we were already four books in.
Right.
And so they brought elements of those later books forward because it helped tell the story in television to have that information.
There are things they could foreshadow that happened later.
Yeah.
Or characters they could introduce in a way that even though they weren't bringing content from the later books forward, they were bringing characters from the later books forward. Because, you know, TV needs B plots, or because now they have that foresight to foreshadow a little bit.
And I guess my question, did you see a lot of that in Bridgerton season one, where it wasn't strictly book one, but there were a lot of elements from the other books brought forward?
Absolutely. One of the biggest things is actually the character of Cressida Cowper, the other young lady that is constantly just kind of a bitch. She is a bitch for most of this. She's always doing
awesome.
Bad things. The punch dumping scene is that she did and getting rescued by one of the Bridgertons absolutely happened. But not in that book.
Cressida is a good bitch.
She's the one that has the prince's attention.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then very suddenly doesn't have
Have the prince's attention. It's pretty clear that Daphne has she wants the prince's attention.
And her mom are definitely like, will have the prince.
One of the things Pat told me that actually kind of was surprising is, you know, you've got Lady Whistledown, who's, you know, the mystery, who the fuck is Lady Whistledown, which they tell you basically at the very end of episode 8, right? There are 8 episodes. And apparently it's not until like book 5.
Yes. It's released at the end of book four. But in the meantime, there are also two books called like Further Observations of Lady Whistledown and Lady Whistledown Strikes Back. Each one is has four novellas in it. One is written by Julia Quinn and three are written by other romance writers that still has the tagline through of Lady Whistledown talking about what happened at this thing or what might happen at this event. So it's all connected. So you don't know, have any idea of who it is until the end. There's speculation, of course, but
of course
you don't know until the end of book four.
And just to say, if you've been listening this far, this is a stop part to skip. Skip ahead 30 seconds. Is it Penelope in the books as well?
Absolutely.
Oh, so Nick called it.
I suspected it was her around the third episode, but the fourth episode, I was like, nah, it's her for sure. So it was more of a, I'm going to use a reference to a show I haven't watched, but it was more of a Gossip Girl thing in the books where it was really something that was an ongoing mystery that you didn't find out until much later. I wonder if they moved that up because they weren't sure if they were going to do more seasons or not, or they knew it would frustrate audiences more than it would. A question along with that is, do the people in the books find out later and that's it, when it gets revealed to the audience? Yes. Maybe that's spoilery. Okay. All right.
The thing is, I remember when we were watching it, Tim's like, do we ever find out? And I didn't answer with a very blunt answer. What I said was, in the books, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You eventually will find out, but it really doesn't matter. Because it's just kind of a tie-in of all of the things, and it's a gossip rag, but everyone loves it. But honestly, it really shouldn't matter who it is until it was Penelope's story.
I will say, for me, the most obvious clue that it was Penelope was when she said, Lady Whistledown is obviously somebody who's at all these events who nobody pays any attention to. And that's when I was like, oh, honey. Like, she, you know, it wasn't her being like, no, none of us pay attention to her. It was like, no one pays attention to her.
And it's actually one of those things that I kind of cringed at because she really never does that. She never does. No.
Tell us some differences.
Third daughter of the Featheringtons. And the mother brings out the three, but really it's all about, hey, here are my two elder daughters, Philippa and Prudence. And this is great. Mm-hmm. Oh, and well, my next daughter.
Mm.
But, I mean, and she's overweight and kind of frumpy. And her mother does not let her wear any dresses that would look good on her.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody else kind of looks good in those colors, but she doesn't.
Yeah. That actress is in a show called Dairy Girls, which is phenomenal.
She's hilarious.
She is amazing. She was when we first saw she was in this, she's one of the reasons we kept watching.
Yeah.
I love that actress who played Penelope. So I'm glad to hear that it was kind of true to the character. Yeah. Tell us more differences.
Yeah. I want to hear more differences too, but I actually wanted to ask a question of you and Nick specifically, Molly. It's like, Pat and I, I'm one of those weird dudes who has no problem going to watch romantic comedies with his wife because I actually enjoy them a lot, and so does she. We totally get into Jane Austen adaptations, all that shit. So, you know, Bridgerton seemed like something that we'd both get into, and we did, and we really enjoyed it. It is a little surprising. It doesn't seem like it's your wheelhouse. My question is, what was it about the show that you got into?
So we have a group of friends it's not like a list of names, right? But we have some friends on Facebook that we kind of pay attention to as far as their opinion on what they
for
love
media
about some things.
Sure.
Like movies, shows, books. And at a certain point, it's like where enough of those people are all talking about it unprompted.
Yeah.
It's not like a conversation about it, but on their own, they're like, oh, fuck, you guys got to check this out. then it's like at a certain point we kind of become obligated to check it out.
I will say that we have a direct pack with Justin Rapella, husband or friend of the show, Andrew Rapella. We have a direct pact with the Rapellas where if the Rapellas like it, we know we're going to like it and vice versa. And so we are the ones, when we said we loved Bridgerton, Justin was like, fine, like I'll watch it. But I will say, seeing you two talk about it, Tim, I didn't know that that like Regency, Jane Austen style romances were something that were ever your bag. So when you mentioned Bridgerton the other day, I was like, well, it feels like something, I mean, you know, Pat and Wendy and Jenny Club and all that all seems like something you guys would be more into. And I read like, whenever there's, I don't really read romance books. I read murder trash, which is a very similar vein in the sense that it's romance books, but people are getting murdered. So but it's very similar in the sense that it's trashy. It's easy to read. It's fun. You read them fast. They feel good.
It's like a pulp genre.
It's kind of a pulp genre in that way. Pulp. Yeah. It's so like, I always talk about the books I read as Harlequin murder, right? Like it's so like, part of me was like, oh, is this just going to be a lot of like, will they, won't they? Like, and I get really frustrated when people won't just say what is happening and that's where all the plot tension comes from. So like, I will say a little bit of Daphne and Simon's, like, where like he wouldn't just say, I told my asshole father on his deathbed that I wouldn't air and I would never, that his line ends with me. Like, he wouldn't say that. He made her feel like it was about her. That made me super mad. And I don't like whenever, and that's why I don't like a lot of romantic comedies, because generally the plot tension and the plot points come from, we are deliberately misunderstanding each other and refusing to just say what we think or how we feel.
A plot complication that could be solved with one assertive conversation.
And so that's why I usually don't like those kinds of genres, because part of me is like, so just fucking say that you like him. I don't understand. I'm too blunt to like get why that would be fun. So this really hooked me because, well, first of all, every episode was like a cliffhanger.
Sure.
Like every episode, it was like, well, then I guess I shall marry the Duke. And I'm like, the fuck? Like, I mean, just like, and so things like that were really fun. I got, one of my friends cautioned me against the rape scene. And I have to admit, I was expecting a different rape scene than the one we got. Mm. So that almost made me want to watch it more, because it felt like, I hate to say this, but it felt like a more woke rape scene. Does that make sense? Like, you don't often see
more of a very complex shade of gray than something that's black and white.
You don't usually see women raping men in that way that is seen with that sensitivity and that, like, you feel angry for him. You know, it doesn't happen very often. So I was actually pretty impressed that was a plot point, and that also kept it going. I don't know.
I mean...
For me, the costumes.
For me, I think the hook was, a lot of it was the casting and the costumes were fucking gorgeous.
I love the queen.
Lots and lots of bright, colorful costumes. And then somehow, despite there being so much interesting color, they also managed to make the Featheringtons color in their dresses gaudy.
Yeah,
like everyone else still had vibrant color in their costumes, but somehow their colors specifically stood out as dated. And I thought that was really great, because I still have trouble pinpointing exactly what it was that made them gaudy and awful in specific ways. I could generalize.
Grasping. They're very grasping.
Yeah. And then obviously, like, the Duke is a fucking smoke show.
Oh, he's
like,
that's a total smoke show.
That's a reason to watch the show right there.
How is anybody a Kinsey One after watching Bridgerton? That's what I want to know.
Word.
Things to mention. I'd love to talk about the rape thing. I think it was done way better in the series because they changed it. I will say why and from the book.
Please,
the series. Sorry? You're frozen.
Please do tell us how they changed it. Yeah.
Okay. So in the series, she has no idea how children are made, and finally is like putting little pieces together and doesn't understand. So when they're having sex and she's on top and does not stop, But he also doesn't really choose to try to push her off. But it's still a, why did you do that? I was verifying that's what you meant. And it changed it to a, I didn't really think that's what you meant. I thought you were barren. Not that I didn't want to. Yeah.
That reminds, it's similar to how I feel the, one of the biggest rape scenes in the game, in the beginning of Game of Thrones, is handled better in the books, which is between Dany and Khal Drogo. Which again, yes, is he raping her? I mean, I guess kind of, because like he buys her, you know? So like to some degree, like, yes, but also like she does, like he does show that even though he doesn't speak the language, he wants her to consent, you know, in the book, but in the show, it was not like that. So like I can, in the show for Bridgerton, they made it very, it was a hateful thing.
Malicious.
Like she was hate fucking him to like make him come inside her. And it felt very, I mean, it was a very uncomfortable scene in the show for sure.
It is. And it makes it way more emotionally complex because of what is happening. Like she's like, did you lie to me? Because that comes down to the whole, the words he used, she assumed barren, as opposed to refused to have children, as opposed to cannot have children.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, she does now know what that means. And in the middle of the night, he's sleepy and kind of drunk and initiates sex. So, and then they have sex and she doesn't wake him up or disturb him. And he kind of sort of wakes up in the middle of it, but she doesn't allow him to leave her mm-hmm. body so that she'll get semen inside of her.
Yeah.
So it's different. And a lot, and there's been a lot, I remember reading it years ago. God, almost 20 years ago, something.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't know they were that old.
And a lot of people were furious that this was even a thing and how could it be? And there were a lot of other people going, it's not rape at all. Because he started it.
Yeah. And 20 years ago, our ideas of what is and isn't rape were far different, to be honest. Like, we have a much more nuanced idea of it now.
It was still really uncomfortable, but it was a reasonable uncomfortable, if you know what I mean. I mean, it was a good point of tension in the book for when they, and they do split up for a couple months, actually.
I will say, we had, I'm curious, you two as men, Tim, I should say, as penis owners who produce semen, genuinely wondering, how did that make you feel? Because part of me was like, oh, you dumb idiot. Like, he's already released millions of sperm in his pre-cum. But like, you know, I understand, like, because I mean, we're all-
Well, the withdrawal method is a really dumb way to do
it.
Anyway,
we're all modernly sexually educated. We know that doesn't really matter. But like, how did that scene make you feel as men? I'm curious.
Well, for me in the show, it seems like he does say like, wait, but then he's still fucking her. And I feel like
he's a lot bigger than she is.
But you shouldn't have to physically restrain someone to not fuck you. But, Molly, but, I feel like, I don't know about other people with dicks, but for me, there's like a point of no return in fucking where all of a sudden your brain turns off and it's like, nah, we're doing this. It's done. Like
lizard brain want babies.
Like, and that could be, and that point of no return could be like, you know, a minute away from coming or like 15 seconds away from coming. But there's a certain point at which my logical brain turns off and is like, nope, this is just biological processes happening.
Okay.
And I feel like I saw that in him where he was like, wait, I don't. And then all of a sudden it was like, not fit. Logic brain switched off. You're doing this. It's happening. And that's not to say that it wasn't rape or there wasn't an ethical dilemma there. But I do feel like at a certain point, you know,
he was still.
There's a lot of ethical questions there. And I actually appreciated it. I think one of the things that I appreciate about like Regency stuff, like Jane Austen and like this stuff. And there's all sorts of stuff you can talk about wealth and privilege. And certainly there's important things to think about when you're looking at these stories. But the thing that's nice about it is compared to normal romantic comedies, which, yeah, have that, would you two just fucking say it? Mm-hmm. In a Regency era thing, it's all about the fact that the entire society is built around not fucking saying it.
Yes.
And there's so much in there about how Daphne is, like all young women in her social class, not educated about sex at all, where men are. And so she is lied to by him. I mean, she really is. She's not wrong. He lies to her. And
so does her mother.
Yeah. And her mother lies to her. Nobody's telling her. She finally has to go to her fucking maid to learn about procreation.
And it's not just her, because Penelope and Eloise are like, okay, hold on. That girl who's pregnant, I asked her how she got pregnant, and she said she fell in love with a guy.
Yeah.
And so now you're like, oh, these poor dumb idiots are going to think that, like, if you have emotional love for someone, you could get pregnant. Like,
yeah.
The mystery girl's first mystery, how do babies get made.
Yeah.
So, and there's so much in the show about what power women have in this society, which I think is really important, because in a society where you can't really have conversations about feminism, they still kind of are, with Daphne talking about what power she has and what power she can use.
And Eloise, what is my life to be?
Yeah.
And
the Duke is using that power against her by lying to her about procreation.
And I will also point out, I got really mad when he was like, I thought you knew. And it's like, you had to tell her to touch herself.
Right?
Like, yeah. You were like, you know how you touch yourself? And she's like, no. And he's like, oh, you touch yourself. And you thought she knew? Right. I mean, like, you thought that, like, someone told her about semen? Like, just.
So it doesn't make her actions right. And I think that's kind of the point, that when I watched it, I was like, dude fucking lied to her, and that doesn't make her retaliation okay, but I understand the retaliation, which on her part was really like, and I mean, she even said she was testing it, because she didn't
know.
Which
it sounds like that's what Pat said was in the book, that she was testing to see if that's what you said.
It's in the show as well, but it's very clear in both different the show and the book that she's still not entirely positively true, because she's talked to some people, but she doesn't really know. And it also could be one of those things of, yeah, I asked somebody, but did they actually know? Because she's only asking women who aren't married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's always that, I'm going to test this to see. So, you know, she doesn't know. So that's why the whole rape thing is talked about. And I think it's better in there. But it's also very, very complicated with all those layers. And Jane Austen is very good about...
You mean, well, not Jane Austen?
No, Jane Austen Pride and Prejudice and all those are really good about showing proto-feminism and the power that women have, and some can use it better than others.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it bothered me about Penelope on the whole, she's got to be somebody nobody sees, is that Penelope every once in a while talks about it when everyone else does, but nobody talks to her except her family and her best friend from... you know, the Bridgertons. And she's at the Bridgertons so much, along with her younger sister, who, Felicity, and let's see. Yeah. Cause Penelope has a younger sister, Felicity, who's the same age as Hyacinth.
Oh. Yeah. I think we saw her like once.
No, there's no,
didn't we?
No, we see Hyacinth, but we don't see her younger sister, Felicity. However, I suppose they kind of did a life for a life in this, because, Mr. Featherington was dead before the book start.
Oh, okay.
He's just dead, and she has four daughters to get married.
Okay, I will. So with that whole, so I wonder if that's why they brought Marina in, to have it be, we have four daughters, we need four dowries. But is the Marina and Colin Bridgerton storyline in the books?
No.
That was something that I will say, I found that storyline to be far more disturbing than the one where than what we just talked about with Daphne and the Duke, yeah. because at least they were engaging in consensual sexual activity up into a certain point, and then, you know, whatever, there's gray areas there, but Marina quite literally tricking, and Colin, what is he, like 16? He's older than Daphne, but 16, 17 years old? Like,
basically, I think he's like 20, yeah.
Okay, okay.
He's still fairly young.
Yeah, but tricking him into marrying her and then her having a child that would then be his and all that was, I was actually on Penelope's side up until the point where she, like, you know, spilled the beans about her pregnancy. But still, the whole, like, you can't do this to Colin, he's a good man. Was there any, was that full cloth for the show, or was that drawn from anything from the books?
That character exists in book five, but she's dead and talking about it.
Oh.
In book five, it's just that there's this distant cousin who, and you don't even have this level of information. The character just is,
you know,
like an object lesson.
I got to say, one of the things that's in the show that Pat told me that's not in the books at all, and I granted, I haven't read the book, so I don't know if there's a good change or not, but apparently the Queen's character in the show is almost entirely made up for the show.
Oh.
I loved her.
She's great.
She is fan-fucking-tastic. She's amazing, but not at all. So when the girls go to, you know, go and curtsy before the Queen on their coming out days, it's only mentioned in, I think, two of the books because, like, Penelope tripped and, like, knocked over some candles. That kind of stuff. And
classic,
I could be wrong on which
foible.
Character. I'm sorry, what?
I said classic fat girl foible. Oh, she's fat. She's clumsy.
Yeah, but there's a lot of that kind of stuff that happens when it's that. But other than that, the Queen's not mentioned at all.
I love her. I particularly love the actress. I love her bored expressions. She looks so fucking bored all the time. Like, she's just like, yeah, okay.
I want to say, like, powerful bitch energy.
Yeah.
The Queen and also Lady Danbury is fucking great.
She's awesome.
I love that character. She's a great character with the cane and the hat, and she's got a little cigar or something
all
the time.
Got a little pimp lean going on sometimes.
She's all, and the flashbacks with her and the Duke as a kid are also great. Like, she's a complicated character.
The way she talks to the old Duke, where she's like, you better, you know, like, this, he is a good boy.
Is she as interesting of a character in the books?
Yes, she is, but that's actually between Lady Danbury and a different hero from not the Bridgerton series.
Oh!
But, because Lady Danbury has her biggest thing as the kind of antagonist in that's called How to Marry a Marquis, where it's her nephew is the Marquis in question, and the person she's trying to get married to him is her companion.
Huh.
So that's what you get all of her glory there, and then in the rest of the Bridgerton books she still inserts herself, and it's fantastic.
You know,
go ahead.
The back to the Queen for a moment. One of the things that I enjoy about this show is how all the characters got depth and nuance, because it's like the Queen is like bored and you know, it feels like she's abusing her power every now and again, you know, and there are these funny asides when, you know, somebody comes and asks her about the King and she's just like, is he dead yet? And then the first time you see her with the King is heartbreaking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like when you realize that the only reason she's asking if he's dead yet is because of how much pain it causes her to be around him.
And you hear from Lady Danbury when she's talking to the Duke. I mean, it was a weird throwaway comment about race that didn't go anywhere. That was kind of weird, but I think we could have done without that. But
absolutely.
when she did say, you know, he fell in love with, you know, her. And so, you know, he actually said the King fell in love with one of us, which I was like, oh,
yeah.
But just the King fell in love with her, Charlotte. And so they clearly had a which the theme of this whole season was a marriage born of love, a marriage that was started in love. That's what, you know, the Bridgerton mother and father, like that's what they had, was a marriage of love. That's what Daphne wants. That's what she gets with Simon. That's the whole, and that's what the queen and king had. And then she's had to watch him deteriorate before her eyes. And to be honest, like, considering how many in-jokes we have and our secret married twin language and how much dementia runs in my family, it's like my biggest fear is losing him or losing me in the process and having to, like, you know, because I watched that with my grandma, you know, and like watching someone who just hates you, you know, because they're afraid of you or they think you're trying to hurt them. And just I agree. It was such a good, there's all these little moments that give such good, and that's one of the things that hooked us about the Duke was when they showed his childhood.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he's not just hot. He's interesting.
And in the book, his dad, way worse.
Oh, really?
He actually tells people that his son is dead.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Pat and I had very interesting conversations after we watched this show.
So,
because he's really a piece of work. Let's see. So one of the other things that were for change, like there is no opera singer. I mean, the opera singer in Anthony, he has one at the beginning of the next book, which is likely going to be the next series because Anthony's the next step to get married. But he has one that he's keeping, and then he has to get rid of her because he's going to get married, because it's the right thing to do to get rid of your mistress before. And not everybody gets rid of their mistress, but he's going to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. That's as much as you know That's as much as you know about anybody he dates or, you know, goes after before going after the woman he's going to marry. So that's interesting. Yep.
So that's a question I had was, so Daphne is the first Bridgerton.
Yes.
Anthony is the second story.
Yep.
What's the order for the rest of them? I'm tempted.
And then Benedict, and then Colin, and then Eloise. So the first one is, I believe, in like 1811. And then like 2 years later is when Benedict's story is, or maybe three. And then like 2 years later, you get Colin's story with Eloise and Felicity. Francesca.
Not Felicity, Francesca. Those
three are basically one right after the other with a little bit of overlap. Like literally the end of Colin's story, the next page is this beginning, and like the next hour is the beginning of Eloise's story. Hmm.
Interesting.
So those three are kind of one. It'll be interesting to see what they're going to do because they're all intertwined.
So you don't have to say if I'm right or not, but I have a theory. My theory is that Benedict is bi and Eloise is gay. That is my. I feel like Eloise is in love with Penelope. I think if she doesn't realize she's in love with Penelope, she will eventually, because I had a friend like that. Let me just tell you, and she also when we both grew up, and she, you know, like Penelope being like, I'm on the market now, and I'm a lady, and I can't have time for you, felt very much like a relationship where you don't realize that you are in love with somebody because you don't have the language for that, right? And I felt like Benedict was. Maybe they were just trying to show us that he was experiencing all the temptations that life has to offer a second son. But it sure felt like he saw that artist having sex with his boyfriend and was like, we can have sex with men? I mean, that's the dream, obviously. But like, is it possible? Like, that's what it felt like to me. But maybe, and you can just, if you want to just say like, oh, the stories aren't very queer, that's fine. But I'm just curious, are the stories queer?
The story is not very queer.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Most het romance isn't.
The fact they're romance novels from 20 years ago, it's kind of like, oh,
When you said,
there are some good authors who have characters that are lesbians on that whole, hey, look at those two old spinsters together. They're always together.
I wonder, though...
When I first started dating Nick, his Aunt Robin had this friend she'd had for like 20 years.
I mean, my Aunt Robin's been out longer than I've been.
I know,
alive,
but it was, but like a lot, yeah, of people were like, "Oh, they're just friends. They live together." It was like, "Sure, they do."
Yeah, whatever. So, let me ask though, Pat, because there is the you know, he goes to that orgy and there's the gay sex scene. Is that in the book or is that
nope?
So it is possible. Yeah. It is possible
they're
that the series might explore some of those alternate sexualities going forward. I mean, I don't know for sure, but
being
the
gay,
fact they
so
put
hot
it in,
right now.
The fact they put it in makes it possible.
Yeah. And does Colin the artist does have go a gay off relationship? And he's gone for like the next two books because he's off going through Greece and other things, mostly just getting really tired of being with the garbage that's in London. Because his mom is all about, oh, my children need to be married.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going through Greece.
Yeah. Is the artist character in the books, and is he gay?
Benedict is an artist, but almost nobody knows it.
No, I
so
mean
he,
the,
should be
the
like
famous
him going
painter.
Off and learning.
The painter.
No, I mean the famous painter.
Nope,
he's not in the book. So no, that was interesting because I felt like that was very much a like, oh, we have a marriage of convenience. You know, she fucks whoever she wants and she doesn't care that I have this very handsome boyfriend over here. And so there was, it feels like in that case, maybe they are, I don't want to say updating and I don't want to say injecting queerness, but maybe they are seeing the way the tide is going and like trying to ride the wave of modern fiction in a way.
Perhaps acknowledging that queerness exists.
Right, as it would
and in that society.
Has, and always has. Yeah. Interesting.
So we got to get to five questions, but I have two things and I want to, if there's anything else anybody wants to say. One of the things that I will say, and I assume this is in the book, but I appreciated because they had eight episodes that you could actually watch the relationship between Daphne and Simon develop. You know, that they at first it's just like they fucking hate each other. And of course, first episode I look at Pat and go, oh well, these two are perfect for each other.
Big Benedict and Beatrice energy.
Oh yeah.
Like, big
yeah,
Benedict
like,
and Beatrice energy.
It's
Nick
there.
And Nora.
But as it goes and they start having these conversations where they're just, you know, hanging out and laughing at each other and finding each other a pleasure to be around, was nice to watch that relationship develop. So it's not just a kind of false romance. It felt, you know, when they get to the part where they're talking about becoming friends before they fell in love, you're like, I saw that. I could see that.
And her mother said that. Her mother said, you want to marry your best friend. You're going to marry the person who is your friend. And I remember thinking like, well, how are you making that possible for your daughters? Like you're telling them, oh, you're going to marry your friend, but you're literally like marketing them to men. Yeah. And you're saying like, well, he's the only one who's shown up for 2 weeks in a row. So you're marrying him. And it's like, but you just said she should marry. There's a lot of conflicting messages for the young women of this time.
Their interaction with men is so limited and controlled. It's like, how the fuck is she going to become a friend with a man when, you know, they can't even be in the same house
or
without
alone.
A social excuse.
Yeah, yeah.
Let alone alone, yeah.
Yeah.
And the second observation, which you touched on, you know, with that weird, you know, bit touching on race, is the thing that's really great about this show is that what they did is they just cast colorblind, essentially. They said, well, what we know, they didn't seem to make decisions about what color various actors were in a lot of cases.
Except all the families that had black people also had black people. So it wasn't like people always say colorblind casting, but they actually, it's not blind.
Race wasn't a factor.
That's
for
maybe a better
the,
way to put
characters.
It. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
And it actually bothered me more when they made it a factor instead of just going, you know what, we're going to make Simon's family black.
Yeah.
We're going to make the queen black.
And it was like episode 3, I think, when they had that, you know, he married one of us and elevated all of us. And I was like,
like they needed an excuse to be black. Like that's what it felt like.
Yeah. It was
like,
weird.
You couldn't just have black people. There had to be an excuse. There has to be a reason to explain why they're there. No, man, just have black people. That's cool.
I wish that line was just cut. I wish it's like 30 seconds, and if they just cut it,
that
the rest of the show
scene.
Stands on its face. Like, you don't need, you're not, no part of me was like, But why is the queen mixed race?
Yeah, like, you can.
It was a stupid
reason to explain to Simon why what he was doing was so important. It's like there are 50 gazillion other reasons that were completely appropriate from the era.
You could have said, like, you know, how about making it about his character? All eyes are on you because no one thought you would ever, you know, rise to anything. Mm-hmm.
Your father thought you were a complete waste.
Your father thought you were nothing and told everybody.
Do you want to prove your father right?
Exactly. Yeah. It could have been any of that. It was so weird. Yeah.
Does anybody else have any final things that they want to talk about before we go to five questions? Pat?
No, not really.
Okay.
I will just say I was super surprised by this show. And if you've made it this far, obviously you've listened to everything. And if you haven't watched it, that's silly of you, but whatever. Some people don't care about spoilers. So if you're still on the fence, I will say this had some very good writing, very good direction. The acting is all top notch. No one is just simpering or just getting by on looks. I felt like the costuming, every aspect of this production was very well done. There's beautiful cinematography. The episodes are well structured in that, you know, things are happening. Even when you think you know what's going to happen, there are a few surprises along the way, in that sense of, like, narratively, you're like, oh, well, she'll probably this, and she didn't. And you know, just there's a lot of really good stuff. And I think that if anything, it was a very great way to test the waters to find out if you're into reading Regency romances. I was watching this and I was like, I know these books aren't for me. I had to read a lot of them in college, right? We read a lot of Jane Austen in college. And I didn't love it, but I love movie adaptations of Jane Austen because I like the stories. I just don't really get into the nitty gritty of who's wearing what color gloves. And so I feel like it just being a visual thing was very cool. Like, and like right away we see the Featherton sisters and I'm like, oh my God, they're like Cinderella's stepsisters, but they're like just the way they act and everything else. And so there's a lot of, I don't want to say tropes, but there's a lot of other media inspiration that's in this. And I think it's really worth your time. It's short given what's 8 hours in a quarantine.
Fair enough. All right, Nick, anything?
No, I think we covered it all.
Sweet. All right. Five questions. Pat, you have prepared five questions for us.
Yes.
Go for question number one.
So we now are getting the vaccines out. Hopefully we will get them soon. What are you looking forward to doing, like, mostly? Like, not necessarily, like, I'm going to Disney World, but, like, more of an everyday activity. What are you looking forward to doing?
Oh, being able to just be, like, because I work from home so much, right? And often it's nice to find an excuse to get out of the house for lunch or whatever. I am looking forward to casually being able to go, you know what? I'm going to go to Target and go just for no particular reason. I don't need shit. I'm just going to go walk through Target for my lunch and stretch my legs and get some fresh air. Like, just casual, non-planned shopping.
I want to hug somebody while a bartender makes me a drink. Like, I want to pay $12 for a drink with ingredients I didn't have to buy. And I want to hug my friend and be like, oh my God, you look so cute. And just, and not worry about dying from it.
Fair enough. If it's just a day-to-day thing.
Yeah, day-to-day thing.
One thing that I really miss is going out for a walk in the winter, like going on a mall walk.
In the Mall of America, yes.
Or even in our local Harmar Mall, which I've thought about doing anyway because there's nobody fucking there even when there isn't a pandemic, and so there's probably fewer now. But there's still, like, you got to work yourself up to it. And it's like I enjoyed that 1 hour that I had when I went and walked and was just kind of alone with my thoughts. I do a lot of my writing in my head before I put it on a page. And that was a time when I did a lot of writing in my head before I put things on a page. So I miss that. And I'm looking forward to having that back. What about you, Pat?
Mine is to go to a movie theater with a bunch of other people, random strangers, sit there, watch something, laugh with other people, cry with other people. Having a shared experience.
Yeah.
Word.
With bad popcorn.
Yeah. Bad popcorn. Word. Question number two.
Okay, so if humans could be any colored skin, I went weird with these. What color would you guys prefer to be?
Oh.
With the caveat that there is no ethnic or problems going on.
I've always wanted to be like a deep shade of indigo. I think that sounds really cool. Like a really, like maybe it's like lavender in the winter. And then when I go to, when I get tan, it's like an indigo. like I think that would be, cause I like getting tan. I enjoy the reaction that sun has, the physical appearance reaction on my skin. So but I think shades of purple are very pretty, and I have blue eyes. So I got to really think about not every color looks good with blue eyes. Believe me, most of the ones I turn don't. So, what about you? Tim, you got a color?
Yeah, when we talk colors, we usually get back to the fact my favorite color is green, and it still is. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I find most things with green skin awesome. So I'd be all for green skin.
Yeah, the Star Trek aliens that are green skinned are very cool.
The Star Trek aliens, the Hulk is green. A lot of alien species and a lot of different things are green. Green skin's good.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
It's not easy, but I can handle it. I can handle it.
I think like a light blue.
Mm.
Like a very
Robin's light egg blue.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is that so colors look differently when they are wet or when they are slick. And so all I can think about is like, I don't want to look like Nebula from Guardians of the Galaxy and the MCU, where she has like a shine to her blueness. I don't want that. I still want like matte skin.
But not like Blue Man Group, like lighter than that.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Gamora is another green character.
Gamora is green. Yeah.
Yes.
Pat, what would you like to be?
In a shock to almost no one, a shade of purple.
Yeah.
We'll be sisters. That. I thought about going with like gold because like there are some characters in a book I read that are like their skin is gold, their eyes are gold, their hair is like metallic gold. And that sounds kind of cool, but also like for some reason that sounds warm. Like you'd be out in the sun, like the way a metal, like a car gets hot.
I want to be reflective.
I do just have to point out that if I'm green and Pat's purple, we're convergence colors. So,
hey, that's good. That's good. That's important.
Question number three.
Okay. So what wild animal would you like to have as a pet, say if they were domesticated and would fit in houses? So you could have an elephant that was like 2 feet tall. Oh,
so awesome.
So they're domesticated, like they if they are natural murder machines, they don't want to murder me or other people that I bring them to see.
Yes, so they would act just like a cat or a dog. If you behave well with them, they behave well. But dogs still can be murder machines, but that's more on the person than the animal.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, you could trust them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we assume they are domesticated and not murder machines,
yes,
I think I just want a tiger. Not a little tiger. I want a tiger.
I just want a tiger.
I mean, I realize that's a problem with the tiger, peeing on the walls and things. But, I mean, we're assuming it's domesticated. You can get it to use a litter box.
It's got a big litter box. It's like
it's
the size
of... a really big litter box.
Yeah. Huge.
That you have to change daily.
My first instinct is raccoon because it's like a cat, it's like a dog, it's got grippy little hands. Mm-hmm. But then upon thinking about why I would choose a raccoon, I think any smaller mammal that has grippy hands would probably be something like a lemur
a lemur would be great.
Yeah, lemur or a raccoon maybe. Raccoon smell.
They don't have to smell.
They're
if they're domesticated, we could have their glands removed like ferrets.
Yeah, maybe I'll just go with the lemur.
All right. I want Okay, so as long as we're dreaming, I want a baby hippo, and it's like they're miniature, like they stay like small. So it's like a hippo that's like the size of a pit bull. Sure. Like that's basically what I want. And it doesn't have to like be wet all the time because they just like to be wet. So it would just be one of those things where like I take a bath, and after I'm done with my nightly bath, I just put the hippo in the bath, and then he has a bath, and then like
just we enjoy both the leftovers of your
yeah,
bath bomb.
Exactly, and like yeah. we both smell like Lush, and we're both very glittery and beautiful.
Pat, what are you putting? I would love an 18-inch tall giraffe.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, so ever since that commercial with that guy talking about opulence who has the mini giraffe. Do you remember that?
I do.
At all?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
Just ever since then, I've been like, you know what? A miniature giraffe would be kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I like that idea.
I agree.
Pat.
That'd be awesome.
Idea.
All right. Question number four.
Question number four. Alrighty. So what crossover TV show, book, movies, whatever would you like to have?
Crossover, like it's a like it's it is a movie and it should be a book, or it is a book and it should be a movie, or
crossover
more like
between properties.
How about Wonder Woman in Star Wars?
Ah, okay, I gotcha, I gotcha.
Oh, okay, that's a tricky one. I am. Do you have an answer for that, Pat? While we can think about it.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah,
actually, I do. It would be Star Wars Princess Leia in between. When she's considered princess and when she's be considered General Leia. So like that journey. And actually I would like to have it with a crossover with Star Trek. So there's a bit of that, how ethical and how to work. And I think that they would go really, really well together.
I my first thought was I would love to see Princess Leia as a Disney princess in a Disney princess style movie.
Oh,
so I mean, she would be her own thing, but it doesn't even necessarily have to be Star Wars or a Star Wars universe. I just want Leia as a like a fantasy Disney princess. I think that would be absolutely delightful and a snarky, powerful good time.
Mine's going to be kind of niche. Okay, so what I want is I want the Gentleman Bastards series, but I want them to have... I want him to be in Mistborn world.
Ooh.
With Mistborn powers.
A heist within a heist.
Yeah. Like I want Locke Lamora to have Allomancy.
Wow. That's a terrifying thing. That's a terrifying thing.
Like just imagine, just like imagine like if it was the same plot basically to the first Mistborn book, but it's the Locke Lamora, it's the Gentleman Bastards.
It's
right?
Wrong for one man to have that much power when that man is Locke Lamora.
Okay, what I want,
yeah.
What I want is I want us to take the characters from the Lord of the Rings and put them in the Toy Story universe.
Are they toys?
Yes, they're toys. And
so
they're
it's like they're action figures, and they have
They're trying to destroy the ring. I just want Sam and Frodo, and all they're doing is trying to destroy the ring while the other characters are, you're just toys. And like,
you're just
we
toys
know,
and
but we've still got to get rid of this ring.
Like they're the Buzz Lightyear. They think it's real.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Frodo keeps putting on the ring to turn invisible, and they're like, we can still see you.
But like.
He's like, the eye is upon me.
Because Disney owns Pixar, like, I would love, you know how they make a Lego... everything like Lego Indiana Jones, Lego Star Wars, Lego Marvel. Yeah. Now I want to see Toy Story X, Y, and Z. Like they can do Toy Story Marvel, where it's someone's Marvel toy box.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
Toy
that'd
Story
be great.
Movie or
someone email Kevin Feige.
that'd be hilarious. I would watch that.
I
want to
see the Thor
toys.
Action figure like hold out his hand for Mjolnir and just. Stand there, and all the other toys are like looking at Mjolnir lying on the ground. They're like, "It's not going
to
work, dude."
Fork in the socket
finally, Rex goes over and he picks up Mjolnir and he carries it over to Thor.
Like,
Thor's
like, he goes,
"You're worthy."
Cap goes to throw his shield, and he's like, "Eh," and someone pushes the notch on his back that makes the shield go.
That'd be great. Oh, that'd be so awesome.
Amazing.
Right.
That's a good
question. Number five.
Question number five. Okay, so it's going to be post-COVID times. You can have people over. You can go somewhere. What food do you want to share with people?
Oh,
as maybe in a potluck setting, or you just cook for them or they cook for you? Just like, what's a meal you're looking forward to?
I miss, we used to go out for all you can eat sushi with the Thompsons all the time. Friends of the show, Eric and Jess Thompson. And I miss going out to just go, like being like, let's just go and like order all this, because it's all you can eat. So it's just, you know, you pay a flat price. And then you get this like long receipt at the end that shows all the sushis you ate. And it's so satisfying. and that is, I miss that so much because there's just no way to recreate that. Sushi's very expensive otherwise. Like it ends up being like, it costs like $100 for the four of you, but it ends up being like $700 of sushi. Like, so that is,
Molly sits down and goes, I'd like 45 tuna sashimi, please.
It's true. Yes, that's what I want to do.
Mine would be, so ironically, we won't be able to do this because we're leaving Eden Prairie, but here in Eden Prairie, there are two Indian pizza fusion restaurants that do like fired, like traditional Indian wood fire, but then they do pizzas.
Yeah.
And so they do like paneer
and
stuff like that as a topping, curry sauces and all that.
Chica.
And they're both delicious. And Molly and I have been enjoying them through the pandemic, but like we're all the way in fucking Eden Prairie. No one, not most of our friends that would enjoy these restaurants. It's a very inconvenient trip for them. I would love it if we could all get that food and enjoy it all together. So I'd give my friends an excuse to try something that's delicious that's not convenient for them.
Yeah.
Ironically, when we leave the pandemic, we won't be living in Eden Prairie anymore. So it'll have to be a special occasion type thing.
Oh, well. I would just, when I think about like a nice social food experience, like a taco bar would be freaking awesome. Just to invite a bunch of people over, may, you know, set out a whole
everyone reaching
meat
in with their hands.
Yeah.
Get their hands going in for shells and like maybe somebody like, yeah, and those people are sneezing, no one cares.
doesn't care. Some people, it's like you do the Lady and the Tramp a taco with one of you eating on one side, one of you eating on the other towards the middle with people you don't even know. It'll be awesome.
It's weird. I thought you weren't invited to our wedding.
Oh, I was there. You just didn't notice me. Bad.
What do you want to do? What's your social food?
Fondue.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say fondue. Mm. That's I didn't say it.
That's love right there. That's love.
Yeah.
No, I 100%. Yes. I love fondue.
Yeah. We have some good family and friend gatherings with over a hot pot of broth. And we have not had that.
No.
No.
Nope.
Well,
maybe we'll go to the melting pot sometime. Oh, I
want to go to the melting pot. We love the melting pot. All right.
Fondue set.
Good.
Yeah, the melting pot. Melting pot's better because they do the work and they clean up.
Exactly. Like, fondue's a pain in the ass to clean up.
it costs more, but it's so worth it. Anyway, thank you for those five questions, Pat.
Yeah,
thank you for joining us to talk about Bridgerton. It is on Netflix, streaming on Netflix season one, but there are more seasons to come, filled with Regency romance action. And
Empire Waists that look like nightgowns.
Yes.
No matter what you're wearing, it looks like a nightgown.
I think Empire Waists look like every woman in the entire series is pregnant all the time.
Uh-huh.
That's what I think it looks like.
When Pat said, like, oh, they make Penelope wear all these unflattering dresses, I was like, unlike everyone else who was only wearing unflattering dresses.
They make her wear more unflattering dresses.
For some reason, her mother has decided that Penelope needs to wear happy colors so she will look happy and get a happy husband.
Ugh.
So they make her wear nothing but yellow and citrus colors.
Oh no.
And they all make her look jaundiced. And actually, one thing about the whole wine being spilled, it's the one dress she was allowed to pick out on her own when Cressida spilled wine on her dress.
That bitch.
I will say, when we got married, I had four very busty bridesmaids, and being a non-busty lady myself, I chose halter dresses for my bridesmaid dresses. And my four bridesmaids were very kind, and they didn't say anything until we were all together on the wedding day. And I was like, "God damn, you girls have good boobs!" And they're like, "You picked halter dresses." Like, it's basically just like, "Here's my tits."
that was just for you. That was just for me. That was just a wedding gift to Molly.
I didn't even know it was a gift to myself until
but
I
you
got
figured
there.
It out. Yes. So yeah, Bridgerton is really enjoyable. Check it out. Even if we spoiled it, we didn't really spoil it. You'll enjoy it. You'll think it's fun. It's charming. It's funny. It's moving. It's all the things, and it has Empire dresses. You can also send us five questions. We are down to like three or four. We don't have many.
Just a few.
Yeah, but we could use more if you're a Patreon supporter, of course. We will bump you right to the top of the queue right beneath whatever Patreon supporters we have right now, which are essentially none. So submit your five questions so that we can answer them. We are going to be back next week with another show. It's going to be great. I don't know what it's going to be about. It won't be WandaVision yet because it's not done, and I really want to talk about it, and we will. We will.
Calm your tits. We'll get there.
We'll get there. All right. We've been Geeks Without God. Everybody have a great week. Goodbye.
Bye.
The withdrawal method, also known as how to get a woman pregnant without actually enjoying sex.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks. Geeks without God.
I could see you decking either one of them.